Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. Hey there, in this episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show, you are going to listen to a replay of the Authentic Persuasion training sessions that are live each week. So in this replay, I'm taking that session, having it here so that you can listen to it, take notes, replay it, digest it, and then put these things into action. If you'd like, make sure to set your calendars for Fridays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, so that you can tune in live. If you want to register and sign up for free, make sure to go to jasoncutter.com, and there's a link on there. Or you can email me, jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com as well, and I can get you the information for signing up. All right, hope you have your notepad ready to go. Let's dive into this replay of the Authentic Persuasion training session. Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to this week's live weekly Authentic Persuasion training session. Today is May 20th. Can't believe May is already flying at the rate that it is. This is session number 32. Welcome. Glad that you're here. I do this every week, Fridays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, and welcome for everyone tuning in via the webinar link, via LinkedIn, via Facebook Live. It's also being streamed to YouTube. If you're not subscribed, make sure to go to the YouTube channel specifically. I'm putting out a lot of content there, a lot of videos from short to longer videos. Just go into YouTube and Google or search Jason Cutter. You'll find the channel in there. Make sure to subscribe, hit the notification button so that you can get the alerts on there. It's really fun because that channel's growing and I'm putting as much content as I can on there. And it's usually easier for people to find the videos than, let's say, on LinkedIn or Facebook. That's where you're watching because of the algorithms and the feeds. So if you want to see some great sales related content, help you close more deals, make more money, then make sure to check out YouTube. And then also welcome if you're listening to this as a replay on the Authentic Persuasion Show. I haven't officially announced it yet, but I am about to launch season 6 in a few weeks. Right now it's season 5. It's mostly replays from this training on Fridays. And I am going to mix it up. I'm going to do some really fun stuff. I am really excited for what's going to be season 6 of the Authentic Persuasion Show. It's like 400 and something episodes right now. And then I am, just so everyone knows, going to go back to 5 days a week just because I am crazy that way. It's going to be fun. But some short episodes, some short clips, some things to help you throughout the week in different ways to help you close more deals, make more money, sell with authentic persuasion, lead a team as an authentic persuading leader, and just build scalable sales teams. So my focus and mission is really to help with mindset and scalability for individual salespeople as well as teams to help them grow and scale and overcome the challenges that happen with a lot of sales teams, and ultimately empower over 1 million authentic persuaders in the world of sales. Because when we do that, we really shift it from being this gross, dirty connotation in the world where they don't want to deal with salespeople versus what it could be and should be, which is a valuable service done by a professional who's there to serve and help. And in fact, I have phone calls all the time. I have meetings for one reason or another. Even just this morning, I had a meeting with someone. He's been in sales for over 30 years. He actually chose to be in sales, which is the opposite of me. He knew that that was the best way to set himself up in life and basically control his own destiny and control his own finances. And, you know, we were talking about it where he's led teams, he's dealt with that. And even when he's inherited teams, no tolerance for the manipulation, the lying, the cheating, all that stuff. And so I appreciate talking to someone who's been in sales for so long, really trying to do things the right way and realizing sales is service and not something you're just pushing on somebody. So if you're on board for that, or you want to shift the way you sell, or you just want to get better at sales, or maybe you just identify more with the term order taker, which is what I have in my book that I wrote, Selling with Authentic Persuasion, but you want to be more effective. You really want to help people. You want to close more deals. You want to hit the numbers you want to hit. You want to make the items on your vision board come true.
And then this is the place for you as well, because an order taker is just a state of condition. It's more of about the stats and the activities right now than a scarlet letter of how you always going to be. And so if you want to shift, it's easy in my mind. It's simple. It's not always easy. It depends on what you want to do, but it's really about you being you and then being effective and powerful as a sales professional. So now, last week's session, I did a Q&A from questions I've received, questions I've seen for leaders, for managers, for people who own companies. Make sure to check that out. If you're listening or watching this and you are in some kind of leadership role, make sure to check out session 31. Again, you can see it here on LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook, the Authentic Persuasion Show podcast. When in doubt, easiest place, you can go to jasoncutter.com and find the podcast link and find all the episodes and find all the content, and make sure to check that out if you're in a leadership role. This week, what I'm going to do is continue with this series and this focus on answering questions back with sales related ones. So I have three questions I want to try to tackle today. And if you're watching this live, you have other questions, please always feel free to put it in the chat, whether you're watching it live or maybe you're watching this as a replay, I still get those notifications. So if you have any sales related questions, anything you're coming up against, any scenarios that you're struggling with, when you deal with this kind of a person, you seem to not be able to get them past X, Y, and Z, put those questions in the chat. Or if you want to, if it's easier, you can always email them to me, jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com. Email me questions, thoughts, ideas, things that you want me to address. And I'm always happy to bring those up and do my best to answer them based on my experiences, what I see for myself. And then also just the wide variety of teams in various countries that I deal with and, you know, where that all fits in. So let's dive into it. Question number one. So this is authentic persuasion questions and answers for you, the sales professional. So question number one, my manager asked me to move up to a team lead supervisor role. Should I do it? And that's a scenario that happens all the time. It's the common practice within organizations is to move people up, move them and promote them from within. A lot of times it is the best thing. And really for entry-level manager, managers closer to the front line, then that's pretty much the best and only way to go. Whether it's a floor supervisor, a supervisor, a team lead, depending on what that role is titled, that is the best way to go, which is to promote someone who's been doing it, move them up into a leadership role. There's many things you need to know and understand before you get into it. With this kind of question, which is obviously very loaded because there's a lot more information and detail that needs to be shared in order to give some good suggestions and or advice. But, you know, back to it, my manager asked me to move up to a team lead supervisor role. Should I do it? Couple of things that come to my mind. First off is, do you want to be in a leadership role? Do you enjoy leading people, helping people? Do you have that patience side, right? Do you have a personality that will be in a teacher mode with that patience that's required to be effective? One of the things I see a lot is that somebody's good in sales or really good in sales, and then they move up, whether they think they want to be in a leadership role or they're voluntold. And basically they know that if they turn this down, that's going to be bad for their career. So they feel obligated to accept the request to move up. And so what happens is they move into that role. They don't like helping other people. Either they just don't enjoy it or they don't have a patience and tolerance for the kind of questions and challenges that other people will have in sales. Really what it comes down to is they feel like they are getting bombarded with dumb questions of people from people who should know better. And that's their mode they're in, which then makes them very impatient from a management leadership standpoint, which is not what you want for the team, for the company, or even for yourself. And it's not that those questions are dumb. It's just when you've done something so much and you do not have that patience, tolerance, teaching side, then you just see it as annoying. Like, you should already know this. I see the matrix. I don't know why you don't see the matrix and you are incompetent for not seeing the matrix, right? And I see that a lot. So really it's the intersection of somebody who wants to be in a leadership role, enjoys it, likes helping other people, and has the patience and wants to do that. Now, here's the key, is that a lot of times when you're in a supervisor, team lead type position, when you get moved up into that, you have some kind of production you're also doing. So you're also responsible for closing some amount of sales over here, and then you're also responsible for helping. You've got to be able to balance both of those things. And do you enjoy that? Some people just purely like to sell. That's what they like to do. They get moved into a team lead type role. Then what happens is they have a compensation plan that rewards them for their own production and for helping the team, but they really like selling, and or they find the team is annoying, or they just don't want to answer those questions because it's getting in the way of what they prefer to do, which is to sell. And then what happens is they dedicate all of their time for that, and they're not helping their team, and their team is failing and floundering and struggling and just not getting that support that they should be getting from a team lead supervisor type role. So you got to make sure that that's not what's going to happen with you, and you've got to find that balance. Now, when we're talking about the compensation plan, this is an important one too. This is something addressing this question is, should I do this? Is what is that compensation like? Are you going to be compensated for sales and for leading, for the production of your team, like some kind of management override? If so, do you think you can be successful at making more money by being in that role? One of the things that's the death of so many people in management and leadership roles, is especially in sales, is when they move up, their compensation plan changes. And then what happens is because of that, they make less money, right? So they went from being an individual contributor that was closing deals and making money and could basically control how much money they could make and did make. Then what happens, they get into a leadership role where they're relying on their team, or it's a balance and their team is not very good. That's why they moved you up into a leadership role, because there was a hole. Either somebody got moved up or somebody sucked and they're gone. And now there's this, you know, something on the range of fairly okay team to dumpster fire that you've now inherited, or the team is growing and they've never had a team lead. So now they're putting someone in a team lead role, and that's what they're asking you to do. And then what happens is you're taking over something that's never existed, and you've got to build it, and the team's not used to it. And there's all those dynamics to it. One of the things to be mindful of is, when with this new comp plan, will you be able to win? Will you be able to make as much or more money than what you are making now? If you move up and you cannot make more money than you are right now as a salesperson, then realize that. If you really like management, leadership, training, helping people, all of those things more than you like sales, you're just good at sales, but you like those things more, then that's okay. That's not going to drive you crazy. But I see people who move up and then they're like, wait, I could make more. And then just becomes this struggle, becomes this battle every single day in their mind. And of course, that's going to come out to the team. And that's not what you want in any way. So you want to be mindful of what that comp plan. Now, when you're a team lead supervisor, again, you have your own production and you have the teams. So what's going to happen is you're going to have the ability to make more. Any decent company will set up a team lead supervisor comp plan where you can make more because you have this override. It's when you start going up the chain that it can be difficult to make more if the company doesn't know what they're doing in structuring compensation plans. And just a side note, if you're watching this or listening to this and you are a leader in a business with a sales team, so you're running a sales team, you're the owner, you're the sales executive, whatever that looks like, if you haven't structured compensation plans where each level up the org chart can make more than the salespeople or that person while they were in sales, then you're basically making it impossible for yourself to have long-term leadership and management in place, because it's really hard to find someone who's okay making less than salespeople, especially if they think they should be in sales. Now, I'm not saying they can always make more than the top salesperson, but there's ways to structure it where you can build it effectively so that people are incentivized. Again, I've seen so many people move up into management roles or literally just turn down management role offers internally because they're like, no, thanks. I'm not going to make as much and I'm not going to do that. And it's not worth it to me, especially when that salesperson sees how much drama the manager has to deal with, how many meetings, paperwork, stuck on emails, just like all of this drama that happens from the outside looking at a manager role and then thinking, wait, why would I want to do that job for less money? So the compensation plan is a big thing for a team lead supervisor. Obviously, you're going to have that included. So that's the main things. Now, on this note, I wrote a ebook. So I published my third ebook in the series of A Sales Consultant's Guide to a few months ago, and it's actually titled Being a New Team Lead. And it goes into a lot more detail, a lot more things to think about and look at. And then also, if you're in that role or you're going in that role, what the company should be providing for you, what you want to be requesting, what you want to ask for, what you want to be mindful of, basically some of the deal breakers in there where if you don't have these things, you will not be successful. It will be a difficult time and you're being set up to fail. So if you like that, you can find that ebook. It's available on Amazon, Kindle, or if you want to email, I'm happy to send it to you for free as a PDF. You can email me, jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com. It's just in the subject, put new team lead, and I'll send you that ebook so you can check that out as a guide in a lot more detail. I'm not going to go through it here. It's make for a very long episode, but if you're getting into you're being asked to, or you're already in some kind of team lead supervisor role where you have a combination of production and then also leadership, email me. I'm happy to send you that book, or you can go on Amazon and you can download it from there, Amazon Kindle. So again, it's The Sales Consultant's Guide to Being a New Team Lead. All right. Okay. Question number two. I used to be a D2D salesperson, so door to door. Now I'm over the phone and working from home. I'm struggling to get the same results I used to get. What can I do? So basically imagine this scenario, and I see this all the time, and sometimes it works out really well and sometimes it just doesn't. But imagine a person who's in sales where they're doing some face-to-face sales. It could be retail, could be retail, could be knocking on doors, something where it's in person. Now imagine that person is now in a phone-focused sales job, a telesales inside sales role, and working remote. So not even just inside sales working around people, but inside sales and remote, which is like this 1-2 punch away from being in person, being door to door, being retail, things like that, because now you don't have the interaction of people that you're dealing with, and then and you don't have the face to face. Here's the thing. This is why people struggle in that transition. I don't know the exact number, but 90 some odd percent of our communication as humans is nonverbal, right? It's physical, it's facial, it's things like that, that are not verbal, right? Not auditory. When you're in a face-to-face sales role and you get good at that, part of it is you just getting good at reading people, understanding body language. Wait, when I said this, they kind of shifted. That's usually a negative thing with body language. And so now I need to say something different to help bring them back, or I'm going to lose them, right? Or I said this thing and they were excited. I see their body language change. They leaned in. That's great. Let me just go faster and more straightforward, right? I don't need to do all this other stuff over here because they're interested. This is valuable. I got their attention. Let's go, right? Sometimes people who are in a face-to-face sales role, they just do that. We do that as humans. We understand these things inherently, right? A lot of it doesn't need to be taught to us. We know we can read people's body language. By the time you get into your first sales role, professional sales role, you have been in lots of relationships. You've met lots of people. You've interacted with lots of people in person. And so you just learn to read it, right? Unless there's some part of you that just doesn't seem to connect that, which again, that gets into things where people, let's say like autism or Asperger's or things like that, where it's like not quite reading the situation and the, you know, sometimes the varying degrees of disconnect. Otherwise, for most people who get into a sales role, you just understand those things. And of course, there's ways to learn it. There's books, there's courses, there's all kinds of experts and gurus who will help teach you all that stuff and overwhelm you with all these things like that you should look out for. And some of it's good and some of it's just building up over time. Then what happens is you get into a phone role. Then you get into helping people over the phone. And now instead of having 100%, right, of the things that you can look out for and listen to and watch for, now you have a small sliver because you're only listening. when you say something, when you tell someone the price is $4,000, you cannot see their reaction. You cannot read their body language. You cannot see their eyes freak out or them being like, okay, cool. Like they're grabbing for their money. Instead, what you've got is only audio. So when there's silence, you don't know, is it good silence? Is it bad silence? Did I lose them? Are they still with me? Are they excited? Are they grabbing their money right now? Or are they thinking how they tell you no and hang up? Did the phone get disconnected? Like there's so many things, so many layers that make it so much harder to do it over the phone, especially if you come from face-to-face. If you come from face-to-face and that's kind of been your crutch, that's been the tools that you use, and you go into the phone world, it's so difficult. I'll tell you from my side, what happened to me is I was always face-to-face. Well, I spent years in the restaurant business and I didn't consider that sales. Although if I went back into being a server at a restaurant and knowing what I know now about sales and persuasion and things like that, looking at what I did just naturally and how effective that was, if I took the things that I know now and what I teach and what I have, it would be so amazing. I would be so much more effective as a server in the right ways. But yeah, that would be super amazing and fun. I went from that into tech support for Microsoft over the phone. But then my real first sales role was in mortgage and it was all face-to-face. In fact, when I started, I remember my first day on the job, my boss basically said, I sent 10,000 postcards. People are going to call in, fill out this lead sheet. When you get somebody on the phone, put them on hold and then come get me and I will take it from there. And then I would watch and see what he would do over the phone. And the rule was as soon as somebody, you know, it made sense, somebody basically pre-qualified and it was somebody that we could help with, do not do anything over the phone, especially at first. Get them into the office for a meeting right away. And really, the basis for that was to build trust, to read their body language, for them to trust you, for you to trust them, build the relationship. Then you could move things as transactional over the phone. But when it comes to like the sales, selling, things like that, all in person. That's how I was raised. Then I went to helping people in foreclosure and I realized I just did that same mode. As soon as somebody called or as soon as I spoke to someone, how can we set in a time? I'll be there. I'll come to your house. I'll be there in an hour. Like it was never over the phone transactional stuff. It was only in person. Then I remember going to a company that brought me in and it was doing the same thing, but all over the phone. And I thought that's not possible. It's not possible because I was raised all in person. Then did some really amazing stuff from a sales persuasion operation standpoint and proved that it was possible. The key is that listening part. If you want to be in phone sales and you're struggling and you come from that, you really have to work on listening. You super have to work on listening. And there's people who will talk about tone and the pace that you talk and all of these other things. I think when it comes to you being authentic, you want to be authentically you. Now, if you are authentic over the phone is kind of like scared and shut down and reserved, and you in person is more animated and excited, well, then that's, you're not being authentic, right? Like you're stuck in your head while you're on the phone and it's getting in your way. And that's why you're struggling with part of that transition, right? It's just because you're not doing what you would have done. Maybe for you, you need to stand up. Maybe you, when you make your phone calls, maybe you need to have some kind of mirror to see what it is. Maybe you need to have a picture of somebody on the wall so that you're looking at that person and imagining they are who you're talking to. And then you just feel like there's more of an interaction there, right? Like making phone calls is weird because you're just like talking out into the void and you have to like imagine it, but you're also doing so many different things that your mind can't just like picture that person. It's busy doing the sales stuff that you're doing. And so that's some things to do. So first step is make sure that you are being authentically you on those phone calls. And again, everyone has a different mode. I don't think there's one kind of tone. I don't think there's one kind of voice or pitch, right? What's annoying to one person could be effective to another. What's too fast is okay for another. What is maybe, you know, this tone is maybe somebody's quiet. Maybe somebody is loud. Like that, it will work no matter what, especially if it's you. And I think like I just look at myself and I'm just like, I don't fit these things. I don't try to like do this tone thing and this thing. I was like, I've just found that what works for me is me being me and then also being really effective at selling and having a process and moving people forward. First, being a human. Second, being a sales professional and moving that forward. And so I think that's the big key. Back to the listening part. This is where most people struggle. Again, if you come from face-to-face and you're now in a virtual selling role as on the phone, especially Zoom, video, that kind of stuff makes it a little bit easier because at least you can see the person, you can read some body language. But if you're in a pure phone only, then you need to make sure that you are always listening, just always listening, and get so good at listening that you can literally hear the reactions that people have. Right? When you talk about price or you talk about terms or you ask questions that might be a little sensitive because you're digging deep in the process, is listen for their response. Changes in the breath, maybe a noise they make. I'm not saying react. I'm not saying pounce on it. I'm just saying listen. A lot of people in the who make this transition struggle with listening. And I'll say, a lot of people just struggle with listening in general. And when you're in a face-to-face, door-to-door role, you can listen a little bit, but you don't need to because you can see all the physical cues and you can just do what you do and just keep moving forward. When you're on the phone, you don't know. Are they interested? Are they not interested? And it's good at times to check in, to ask them, does that make sense? Is this fit with what you're looking for? Is this kind of what would help you, right? There's some things you can do to check in, but you also don't want to do that too much. If you check in too much and too often, kind of gets annoying. It's like, yeah, I got it. Okay, what's next? I got it, right? You just want to still be in control and move people forward, but you want to be listening, hypersensitive to listening. And then when they ask a question, make sure that you handle it in the right way, because sometimes it's a question, sometimes it's a concern, sometimes it's a straight up objection, and they're throwing up a giant wall and they just want you to stop because they're really scared. Most people in sales, unfortunately, react to all of those the same way, which is usually by hitting it with too much of an ejection response and saying too much and going into full sales mode and only making it worse and making that person even more afraid. And so you want to make sure you're listening and then confirming and using a really good strategy. I wrote an ebook that came out last year called Overcoming Objection. So it's a sales consultant's guide to overcoming objections, both yours and theirs. But in there, I discuss the difference between those three types, the questions, the concerns, and the objections, and then how to handle them in the right order so you can differentiate what it is that they just threw at you and understand why they did. Again, you can find that one on Amazon Kindle. You can also email me, jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com. Just put overcoming objections. I'm happy to send you the PDF. Plus there's some a worksheet that you can get that you can download for building that out for you so you can understand how do you handle those without overreacting. But those are the big things. Active listening, the more listening you can do, the better, and that will help you with that transition. All right, let's go with question number three. And this one I absolutely love, don't love. I don't want to say hate it, but I love it. And I love talking about this one. So here's a specific question. I'll get into what I enjoy about debating this one. It says, every no gets me closer to a yes. Right? Not so much a question as far as that mentality. And that's common, right? It's common in all forms of sales. It's common advice, kind of in a motivational mindset, like every no gets me closer to a yes. You see that in, again, going back to door to door, which we were just talking about, any phone sales, any outbound, any cold calling thing, anything where there's this feeling of the numbers game. And this is why I think this is potentially dangerous advice and can be the wrong advice in the wrong ways. Now, of course, every no will, you know, gets you closer to a yes mindset and mentality and mode is accurate, can be true, right? If you know that it takes 20 phone calls, 20 conversations for you to, you know, book one appointment or get one client. Okay. So if I've made 15 calls today so far and I've heard no 15 times, statistically, law of averages, somewhere in the next five calls, I should be winning, right? I should get my yes. It should be good. Part of this, which is dangerous, is you've got to look at it over the right period of time. Is it within those exact 20 calls? Is it always within one day? Is it within 20 calls as an average over a lifetime of salespeople and numbers within that industry and that company or yourself, right? Like if you look at every call you made in the last 6 months, it works out to be 1 in 20. Now, that means today it might be 1 in 20. Tomorrow you might get 1 in 40. And then the next day it's, you know, it could be 1 for 1. You make one call, you get one yes. Who knows, right? But it's an average. So one of the things to keep in mind to help yourself mentally is to understand that that is a average. You see some people put themselves into a desperate slump because today they made 40 calls and they didn't get any yeses. And they're like, oh my gosh, did I lose it? Am I slipping? Am I not effective? What's wrong? Oh my gosh, is it the leads? Is it me? Is it the taxes? Is it the government? Like, is it the weather? You know, and then they start spiraling. So you've got to be careful with the numbers game. Every no gets me to a yes average thing. So you've got to play that out over enough time. Remember, you're playing usually a daily game. Most people are playing a daily or a weekly game wrapped up in a monthly or a quarterly game. And so you've just got to play that out long enough. Now, here's where I think it's really dangerous advice. And where I really think at times this is really bad advice as a blanket thing for people who may not be good at sales or struggling to just put this as their mantra. Every no gets me closer to a yes. Like I hear it all the time. I can like hear it basically like from a on stage motivation. Everyone's clapping and everyone's excited. And let's go, you know, sales managers getting everyone excited. The problem is that if you suck, every no that you have is just going to keep building on every no that you have and doesn't mean you're going to get closer to a yes. And I know that's harsh. There's a lot of people in sales who are not good at sales. They're not effective. It's not necessarily their fault. It's how they're raised. And that means that it's their sales manager. It's their trainer. It's the recruiter. It's the leadership of the company hasn't given them enough tools, enough coaching, enough mentoring, enough leadership, enough management. And they're just not effective. They're just a mess. So many times I have companies send me call recordings. Right? They're like, no, my team is great. Listen to these calls. I don't think you'll find anything wrong. And I listened to them. I was like, this is terrible, right? Or just missing things, basic things, fundamental foundational things that just aren't being done. And it's like, yeah, you could make 100 calls. It doesn't matter, right? Now, here's the thing. And this is what makes this so difficult and dangerous is that if you make enough dials and you're not a complete jerk, right? We'll just leave it at that. If you're not a complete jerk when you talk to people, you will stumble across people, right? You will find somebody who will say yes. You will always find somebody who says yes and would have said yes to what's being sold, no matter who called them and no matter who they talked to, as long as that person was nice or nice enough. Sometimes not even nice, just nice enough. Like they say, what is it? A blind squirrel will find a nut. I don't know the exact phrase, but like if you scramble around in the dark long enough, you will find whatever you're looking for. Might come quick, might come long time. That's what I feel like is with a lot of people in sales. They're playing the numbers game. If I just make 100 dials, I know I can be that. But what you're looking for in that mode is you're just an order taker looking for someone who's essentially a laydown that was ready to go or was so open to whatever is being pitched that as long as you're nice enough and as long as you have most of your stuff straight, they would have bought from you as they would have bought from someone else. And this is funny because this is literally my mode with brand new salespeople. So when hiring new salespeople and putting them through training and then putting them on the phone, I basically tell them all, I say, here's the deal. You're not going to be very good at this. You're still learning. That's okay, right? You're going to be a hot mess. Once you get somebody on the phone and they actually answer and then you're going to go through your process and they want to hear it, everything that we did in training is out the window. It's just gone. It's just going to be a mess, right? Whether you have a script in front of you or not, you have the process outlined, whether the technology is flawless, doesn't matter. It's going to be a mess. And I tell everyone, I said, here's your goal. Your goal is to make the phone calls needed to, as quickly as possible, find that person who's just so nice and easy to talk to that they are going to buy from you no matter how much of a mess you are. That's what you're looking for. That's what you want when you're new, because then you have that experience, you get through a whole sale, and then you're like, okay, I got it. Obviously, I need to get better, get that out of the way, and that's perfect. And that's really what you're looking for. The challenge with the every no gets me closer to a yes is if you're not very good, you're not trying to be better, and your company isn't helping you get better, then that you're leaving this scorched earth behind you of bad phone calls and bad sales experience with these potential customers who now just like they don't want it no matter what. And then also you have this false sense that if I just make enough phone calls, this will be good. Right? That's why when I look at metrics and I look at teams and I'm going through and I'm helping companies with building their scalable sales operations, one of the things we look at the stats, it's like, why does this person take 40 conversations to close a sale? And this person takes 200 conversations to close a sale. Same data, same processes, same script. If they're following it, what's missing? And so maybe this person over here is just not very good. Every no gets them to a yes, except it's 199 no's in order to get to a yes. Right. And so it's dangerous advice unless you're open to feedback, unless you're working on your process. One of the things I wrote in Selling with Authentic Persuasion about the sales success traits in making yourself a sales professional is openness and curiosity are the two big things that you want to start with. Persistence is actually number four, because if you're persistent, but you're just bad at it, or you're a jerk, or you're closed-minded, you're just going to break through walls, but it's not going to be the right ones. And it's not going to be sustainable. It's not going to be effective long-term. So you want to make sure that you're open. Make sure you're getting feedback. If you're a leader watching or listening to this, make sure you don't instill this every no gets us to a yes mentality and mindset and the numbers game mode without backing it up with getting better every single day. Without some training, without some coaching, without some mentoring, without some management skills, without the leaders getting better at leading and putting in place whatever you can to help the salespeople get better in their own ways with different techniques like sales, mindset, the systems, the processes, all of that. You've got to make sure. So otherwise, if you're just playing the numbers game and that's what you're committed to without any continuous education, personal or professional development of your team or even yourself, it's just going to be the definition of insanity. You're going to expect a different results, except you're just doing the same thing over and over again. And we just like, why aren't we winning? We should be winning. We made our 100 dials. Why didn't we get a yes? Oh, we got a yes, but wait, maybe we could have gotten 3 yeses or 5 yeses or maybe 10 yeses. Like, why are you tolerating that level of numbers game? And this every no gets me to a yes. So again, it's not that that advice is bad. I just think it's dangerous and sometimes wrong if you don't match it up with what it takes, right? Like, I'll give you an example. If I go out there, and anyone who knows me personally knows this is very true. If I go out there to play basketball, and let's say I go to the 3-point line, and I'm like, all right, every miss gets me closer to making a basket, right? And I just go there and I just shoot. And I just shoot. I'm not working on my technique. I'm not trying to get better. I don't have a coach. I don't have somebody watching and helping me. I'm just like, law of averages. Every shot I take, every miss will get me closer to a make. And I shoot and I miss. And then let's say the 20th shot, I make one and I'm like, all right, perfect. 1 for 20. That's great. I'm amazing. Right. And I'm just going to keep doing this. Every no gets me closer to yes. Every miss gets me closer to making one. That's not how that works, right? That's just random. That's just luck. If you're not trying to get better, if you're not working on your craft, if you're not consistent, if you're not consistently shooting it, then you're not going to be effective. And match that up with this advice. The advice is practice makes perfect. And you know what? That is really bad advice because it's missing a key. If you practice something the wrong way, you will be perfect at doing it the wrong way. I could practice my 3-point shot and get my mechanics dialed in and have them suck, have them miss the basket all the time. But practice makes perfect. I have a perfect shot that's perfectly off. No matter what I do, it's a mess, right? You know what's accurate? Perfect practice makes perfect. when I practice it perfect, when I have a coach, when I'm following mechanics, when I do what I know works for me and what should work, with everything involved, and I practice it perfectly, now all of a sudden I'm getting closer to perfection, even though that doesn't exist. Same thing with sales. It's not about practice. Not practice makes perfect. The numbers game. Every no gets me to a yes. Only if you're an order taker. And the way to offset that is by actually practicing perfectly, by building up, by listening to your phone calls, like getting feedback, having a coach, having your manager help you and mentor you and lead you. So hopefully that helps. It's kind of my long rant on the numbers game and why I think it's dangerous. It's not wrong. Once you get it dialed in and once you know what that number is and you're playing it out over a long enough time frame and you're constantly working on how do I get him better? How do I do every day? How can I get just a little bit better, get a little more effective? How can I work on myself just a little bit more, work on what I'm saying, what I'm doing, my mindset, my activities, my action steps, like my focus. If I'm doing that, then yes, numbers game is perfect. You dial it in and you go, boom, 1 for 20. I know what that is. Let me see if I can beat that this month or this week. Right? And let me look at the averages. It's not that that advice is bad or wrong. It's just dangerous when not used correctly. So hopefully that helps. Hopefully some good stuff. I mentioned a couple of the eBooks. If you want those eBooks, make sure to email me, jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com. Happy to send them to you as PDFs. Or if you prefer, you can go on Amazon and find them as Kindles. So under the Sales Consultants Guide series. And that's it. And I appreciate everyone for tuning in and being a part of this journey and a goal I have for shifting sales from being a dirty word to something that the world trusts and respects and actually looks forward to dealing with. And I'm doing this while also trying to help all of you close more deals and make more money. So until next time, make sure to keep doing what you're doing. And thank you for helping me fill the world with authentic persuaders.
That's it for the replay of the Authentic Persuasion weekly live training session. Again, make sure to catch them live Fridays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. You can go to jasoncutter.com to sign up so you can get alerts, put it on your calendar and have the links for when it goes live. And you can always email me jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com and I can get you the information to sign up as well as let me know any questions that you have, topics you want me to cover, or guides that you may be looking for. Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.